I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. The Sunshine State will be home to one of the world's largest solar energy farms. At least that's the bold announcement that came out this month from National Solar Power, a little-known company based in Melbourne. The company, which is only 2 years old, named four Florida counties as finalists for a $1.5 billion solar energy farm. Osceola County is among the finalists. The 400-megawatt farm would power as many as 32,000 homes. We'll talk with National Solar Power's chief executive about the company's plans. And later in the show, a panel of experts from the University of Central Florida, Stetson University, and Florida Power and Light discuss solar energy in the Sunshine State. All those conversations ahead on Intersection. And I'm joined by National Solar Power Chief Executive James Scrivener. National Solar Power has named four Florida counties as finalists for a $1.5 billion solar energy farm, Osceola County among the finalists. James, welcome to Intersection.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Now, National Solar Power is billing this as the world's largest solar energy farm. Yeah, this is a small company, a new startup. How does a small company like this go into something that is being billed as the world's largest anything?
With bold vision. I guess that's the best way to put it, and a lot of enthusiasm and community support. We are at a time where the energy markets are changing very rapidly, and the technology for photovoltaics or solar power at the utility scale is really leading the way in regards to cost effectiveness. And our vision as a company is to build actually distributed farms.
Solar energy farms.
Correct. Solar energy farms made with solar panels in the middle of a field. We call them farms because we envision them as farms where we're effectively harvesting the sun. We do target agriculturally zoned land because it's good for our uses, our applications. It's not land that other people view as having a tremendous amount of value for future development. It doesn't generate a lot of tax base back to the local community, so it's a good target for us.
Why are you starting at something so big, though? Why not start smaller and kind of grow the operation out?
Frankly, 400 megawatts isn't really that big. It's considered big for sort of the traditionalists in the solar marketplace. But when you look at utility scale power generation, 400 megawatts of distributed generation, especially PV, is really not a lot of power. Very small, in fact, comparatively to, for example, a natural gas turbine plant or a nuclear plant.
Now, solar power has been around for a long time. Hearing you say that you're going to build the world's largest solar energy farm sounds astounding to me. Isn't there an operation at least of this size somewhere else in the world? You're saying there's not.
Well, there are facilities in the U.S. and around the world right now that are approaching sizes of 100 megawatts. In several locations. I know of a plant in Malaysia that's upwards of 73 megawatts. There's one in Canada that's approaching 80 megawatts. And there's recently a project announced in California that was upwards of 500 megawatts of PV. So that the scale at which we discuss solar projects is changing rapidly. It's not just us. City of San Antonio put out a 50-megawatt RFP a few months ago and a week later changed it to 400. Because the economics are changing so rapidly.
Well, what has changed? Has anything changed in the technology that is enabling you to do this now that wasn't possible just a few years ago?
The biggest changes in regards to the technology, efficiencies have improved, and the ability to harvest well has improved as a result of improvements in technology. The single biggest change that we've seen in the marketplace has been, frankly, just the cost of the commodity products, the cost of the technology themselves. In Asia, a number of governments and large corporations have invested vast sums of money, billions and billions of dollars, into investing in the infrastructure to produce solar panels. And now, you know, you have upwards of four, five, maybe six large-scale Asian manufacturers who can produce on volumes that 2 years ago would have easily made any one of them the largest in the world at very compelling prices. Perhaps 30% of the prices we saw in the wholesale market 2 years ago.
Now, you're working on an agreement with Progress Energy to sell them the energy that you produce at this solar farm. Talk to me a little bit about that and, you know, why Progress? There's a lot of other power generators in the state as well.
Correct. Progress Energy, for one, they're a publicly owned utility. So as an IOU, they have a contracting mechanism known as standard offer contracts. Also, we currently have multiple agreements executed with Progress Energy Florida. They're filed with the Public Service Commission. Those are public record. Progress Energy, frankly, has been a great partner for us. We approached them as well as other utilities early on in our process, and Progress was one that gave us enthusiastic and tacit support in what our goals were and shared our vision, so to speak. So we've made them the focus of our efforts for right now.
Do you see this model that you have of having you're producing the solar energy and contracting it out essentially to power companies? Is that going to be the wave of the future in terms of a business model for other solar? Or, you know, someone like FPNL has already invested. They own the infrastructure for their solar production. Do you see one model overtaking another eventually?
No. Currently, you know, if you looked at an analysis in the U.S. energy market of publicly owned utility generation versus independent power producers and qualifying facilities, the mix has been fairly stable for about 30 years now, maybe 20 years. There hasn't been much change. And frankly, where there's competition, private industry will find ways to be more efficient. And that's part of what will drive the market. And public service commissions, who are really the folks who drive a lot of these policies and who will drive the direction of the market to a great extent, will react to the changes in the marketplace. They will have to. And solar is not in a position to replace legacy generation. It's not in a position to replace coal. This is the beginning of a revolution that's going to take place over an extended period of time. And it may not necessarily always be photovoltaics that's the leading technology, but domestically produced clean energy makes so much sense for so many reasons that it really can't be stopped. It can't be denied.
Well, James, what's going to make your final decision as to which county you're going to go to in Florida, and what's the time frame for making that announcement?
Okay. We anticipate making an announcement within the next 2 weeks. We have multiple pieces of land in Florida under contract right now with private landowners, and we're in negotiations with county officials selecting the best location to start building first, and that, of course, has to be cross-referenced with interconnection requirements and the utility companies. So we're juggling a few balls right now, but we do expect to make an announcement within a couple of weeks.
I've been speaking with National Solar Power Chief Executive Officer James Scrivener. National Solar Power is named 4 Florida counties as finalists for a $1.5 billion solar energy farm. Osceola County here in Central Florida is among the finalists. James, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Mark.
Coming up, our panel discussion about the state of solar energy in Florida. You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM. I'm Mark Simpson. Do you have solar panels in your house? How do they help with your energy costs? Tell us about it on the WMFE Facebook or Twitter pages. You can send email to intersection@wmfe.org. Solar energy is on the rise in Florida, and here to talk about the future of solar, I'm joined by James Fenton. He's director of the Florida Solar Energy Center at the University of Central Florida. James, good to have you with us.
It's nice to be here.
And I'm also joined in studio by Tony Abbott, director of the Environmental Science Department at Stetson University. Tony, great to see you.
Thanks for the invitation.
Also joined by Buck Martinez, solar energy expert at Florida Power and Light. He's joining us by the phone. Buck, great to have you.
Great to be here today.
So, James Fenton, I want to start with you. How do you characterize the Sunshine State as a solar energy producer? Where does Florida compare with other regions across the U.S.?
Well, as one might expect, the Sunshine State has plenty of sun, so that's not an issue. As far as policy goes, here in Florida, partially because our utility's done an outstanding job at keeping the electricity costs down, we don't feel it's broke, and so we haven't looked at alternative energies. And so, unfortunately, while we've had some recent successes, Florida Power and Light has installed some large fields in solar, we're just getting started here in Florida. We've got a long ways to go to catch up with the other states.
And how much percentage would you say of the state's energy comes from solar?
Clearly less than about 0.01% or something. Buck could probably correct me on that.
So we're talking really minimal. Buck, what do you think?
Yeah, Jim's right. We've got a fleet of about 24,000 megawatts, of which 110 of those megawatts are solar.
So from the standpoint of Florida Power and Light, how important is solar for the current situation and for the future, Buck Martinez?
I think it's extremely important. I think one of the issues that we wrestle with in Florida is the need to diversify our fuel mix. And right now we are very bullish on solar, but unfortunately, as Jim mentioned earlier, there just isn't any policy that allows us to do that. So we are going to be approaching about 70% of our fleet will be natural gas. And then we've got, obviously, we've got some nuclear. So solar is the one area that would allow us to truly diversify our mix. It would also allow us to bring a lot of the economic development that solar provides into the state of Florida. Because today, FPL is one of the largest producers and consumers of natural gas. And that those are in billions of dollars. Unfortunately, those dollars go out of the state. Where a solar industry would allow you to bring that industry into the state and allow you to vertically integrate a number of areas that would create huge opportunities for the state.
Well, let me ask Tony Abbott about that. Tony, what do you think about what you're hearing in terms of where solar plays in the state's energy mix? And what do you think also along policy lines, is Florida well positioned to take advantage of what looks to be a rising wave of solar energy construction?
Well, at the moment, we're not extremely well placed with regard to policy. Now, there's a lot of opportunity for us to tweak our policy based on the experiences of other states, because many states have been kind of aggressive and experimenting with ways to fund these new alternative energy sources and other avenues besides solar as well. So we have a chance to learn from those experiences at this point.
Who should Florida look to as a leader in solar?
Well, of course, Arizona is a great area for the development, and they've been kind of forward-looking in that way. So we could possibly learn from some of their experiences, as well as Texas, and I would say California as well, just off the top of the head. But it's really kind of a detailed landscape, so I wouldn't restrict it to any few states. And there's a lot of data and a lot of information out there that we could look to take advantage of many experiences.
Buck Martinez.
Yeah, if I may piggyback, I think part of the issue is in 2008, Governor Crist allowed for 110 megawatts of solar into the state. So we in essence have a tremendous success record. So as far as policy goes, they implemented a policy. Unfortunately, it wasn't a long-term sustainable policy. It was a one-off, one-year policy. But what we do know is that policy worked, because from the time that the governor instituted that initiative, 9 months after PSC approval, we had completed the world's largest photovoltaic project at that time. It was 400 jobs were created, a lot of tax revenues for the county. So we already have a policy that, if reenacted, would allow you to do this. We really don't need to be looking to other states, although I think it's okay to do that, and I think we've got some success records, you know, such as, you know, we mentioned as Arizona, but we do have something that historically worked here, and it'd be very simple to replicate.
Well, yeah, I'd like excuse me for interrupting. As Buck has mentioned and as Tony has mentioned, you know, we're talking about solar and the resource and building power plants with solar all over the state, which would be good. Okay, I want to turn also to the fact that a PV panel can be manufactured in
Florida.
That's
photovoltaic.
The photovoltaics, right. And so when we talk about solar, you know, roughly the amount of jobs you're dealing with is on the 25 jobs per megawatt. Half of them are in the actual manufacturing of the panel. So as costs come down, of course we'll be installing solar all over the state of Florida.
But do you,
I want the
do you
panels made in Florida, not in China.
Do you hit a point, though, James Fenton, when you've manufactured enough photovoltaic cells, that as many as are needed, what happens then to that manufacturing demand? Does it end up drying up?
Well, I don't think we're going to run into a problem, is because the whole world is going to be demanding the cheaper power supply, which is from the sun. All right. And so with a port here in Florida nearby, with the South America just off our shores, effectively, we can really take advantage of exporting more PV panels than we actually need internally. And we'll keep all the wealth here in Florida.
Well, I want to ask Buck Martinez. You know, Buck, you mentioned that Florida Power and Light at one point did have a very large solar energy project that came online, thanks to state policies giving incentives for that. But earlier in this program, we were just talking with National Solar Power about their plans for a large solar farm here in the state of Florida. What does a project like that mean for Florida Power and Light, which is already so deeply invested in solar infrastructure? Their model is to contract out to Progress Energy.
Yeah, I don't really know. We haven't been contacted by them. But what I will tell you is that from the time we built DeSoto and from the time we built NASA to today, we have seen a tremendous drop in solar prices. And we'd love to be able to demonstrate to the ratepayers of the state of Florida how reasonable solar costs are becoming. So from our perspective, we've got over 500 megawatts of solar ready. They're permitted. We could begin construction, you know, immediately upon approval by the state legislature or the PSC. So what that would mean for the state would be, one, you would be able to diversify your energy mix, which creates energy security for the state. Right now we've got, you know, two pipelines coming from the Gulf of Mexico that provide all of our natural gas. So
and storms can interrupt those, and they have in the past.
Sure. There are certain curtailment factors, you know, such as storms, such as potentially, you know, God forbidding, natural terrorist, you know, disaster kind of scenarios. But solar is the one entity that allows us to truly diversify and improve energy security. The economic development aspects. People don't realize that a vertically integrated system here that would allow, as Jim mentioned, manufacturing, research and development, engineering, and potentially a consortium that would allow you to build the semiconductors for PV cells will create thousands of jobs for the state of Florida and truly get us off some of the, you know, traditional patterns of which is predominantly tourism in the state.
Well, I want to throw this to our panel. You know, this is very interesting that there seems to be a surge of interest in photovoltaic and solar right now in the current times. And I wonder, what has changed? What has changed to make this suddenly the hot technology, no pun intended there, sitting in the sun? I wonder, James Fenton, if you might tell us.
Yeah, alternative energies are always going to be an alternative until they're cheaper. Now we're starting to see that solar is a cheaper option.
What happened to make that?
Well, in a lot of cases, it's because huge markets have opened up, unfortunately not here in Florida, but in other states and through other countries. And so as a result, the economies of scale get much better. So from a manufacturing point of view, if you're manufacturing a lot of products, you really drive the costs down. And there's been a lot of new innovation and inventiveness, something that the United States still excels at. And so that's why I believe we can innovate those new PV panels that haven't even been invented yet.
Well, Tony Abbott, jump in.
Well, there are also aspects of the economy which are starting to come into play here as well. Fossil fuels used to benefit from enormous blind areas of cost that are now sort of becoming more visible. Pollution is not something that you have to think about with regards to solar. You don't have to have fuel transport costs. So a lot of those aspects of the economy, which have been heavily subsidized, are now coming into play and giving an advantage.
Tony, what happened, though, only a few years ago, everybody was talking about biofuels. That seemed to be the fuel du jour, and now that seems to be sliding back, and we see solar jumping forward. What is going on in that energy? Is that still a competitor for solar?
Well, biofuels really suffer from some of the same downsides that fossil fuels do. They don't occur in place. You have to transport them. They have to be made and refined. So the fact that they're coming from plant sources, which aren't as efficient or producing as much energy per amount of effort as fuel sources, makes them not really competitive with existing petroleum sources. And so the subsidies there just don't really catch fire in as way as, maybe giving a little bit of support to a solar industry would.
Buck Martinez, I want to get your opinion on this. You know, what has changed? Have you seen a change in solar's affordability as you look at what Florida Power and Light is trying to accomplish recently?
We've seen a change, and we've seen a dramatic change, but I don't even think we're at the cusp of what we're going to be seeing in the future. I think today people have this perception that solar is still a lot more expensive, and I wanted to put it in perspective for the team. I think for us, if you look at a 100 megawatt block, if we were to build a large scale utility solar project, 100 megawatts would be less than a dime to the average consumer's monthly bill. That's what we're talking about. But that dime, or less than a dime, would create tremendous savings in greenhouse gas emissions. Basically, it requires no fuel, no cooling water, which is going to be a precious commodity. It is a precious commodity to the state. Water will be a huge issue for us in the future, and solar power requires no water. And it creates a significant amount of jobs. And I wanted to mention something Jim hit on earlier. We are very fortunate to have a lot of deep exported opportunities here. We have ports that have deep water routes. We can be the number one exporter of manufactured solar panels all over the world. We have the Caribbean. We have Central and South America. And what Jim mentioned that keeps some of the solar out of Florida is the fact that we've got very low cost electricity. Well, they do not have that in a lot of these other countries. So it's a natural avenue for solar to begin to be implemented. So we, Florida, could be the one that takes advantage of that and creates a true hub here of a renewable energy cluster.
Buck, I do want to ask you, you know, in terms of Florida Power and Light right now, the company is pursuing building new nuclear reactors around the state. Do you foresee that solar could maybe alleviate the need for those large power-producing plants that are currently going through the permitting process?
I think it's a coexistence. I think what happens is solar will never be your base load capacity. So what happens is, you know, solar typically gets produces power approximately 6 hours a day. So solar is an opportunity to maximize capacity, especially during the summer months. But you're always going to need your base load capacity. And those would come from either your fossil fuels or your nuclear. And nuclear still happens to be a very low cost, very clean technology. So, you know, we still have a significant belief that there needs to be a diverse fuel mix.
James Fenton.
Yeah, I just want to point in some issues. A lot of what our difficulties in understanding this complex energy situation is time itself. You know, in the 80s and 90s, the price of gasoline was $1 a gallon, and electricity in Florida was 8 cents a kilowatt hour. From the year 2000 on, fossil fuels have gone up 5% roughly a year, okay? And a lot of us are still living in back in the 80s and 90s when the costs were constant. So a lot of the reason why alternative energies, whether it be for transportation and biofuels or PV for electricity, are getting better is that the traditional costs are going up while the renewables are going down. So we hit this intersection point. And in the case of Florida, since our electricity rates have been so low relative to other states, all right, that's why other states have done things before us. But we can learn from that.
Well, I also want to throw out to the panel, you know, as we look out the window right now, we can see that there's partial cloudiness. Florida is not a desert climate. There are clouds over the state a good portion of the time. And I wonder, Buck Martinez, with your own direct experience, have you seen that Florida is an appropriate state to be investing this level of solar infrastructure as opposed to somewhere like a desert climate?
No, that's a great question. We're obviously bullish on it, I think, even though we do have some cloud coverage. The technologies are getting better and better at being able to absorb the sunlight. So we're seeing some tremendous performance both at our DeSoto project, which is photovoltaic, as well as NASA. And we are extremely proud of that performance. So we, here at Florida Power and Light, just like at FSEC, we have built a living lab where we have multiple technologies on our rooftop. And what we do is we're continually assessing different technologies and how to produce both thin film, mono and polycrystalline and other type of technology. So we are firm believers that Florida's irradiance can be, you know, a significant opportunity for us to build a lot more solar.
I just want to tell our listeners we're talking about solar energy in the Sunshine State, joined by James Fenton, director of the Florida Solar Energy Center at UCF, also joined by Tony Abbott, director of the Environmental Science Department at Stetson University, and by phone, Buck Martinez, solar energy expert from Florida Power and Light. James Fenton.
Yeah, I just wanted to add on to Buck's comment there. If you look at the Arizona desert and you want to call that sunshine of 100, Florida's 75. Okay, the United States has more solar resource than the world's largest market, which happens to be Germany today. So Florida's got twice as much sun as Germany, and yet Germany's the biggest market. A lot of that is policy, as we've said earlier, and Germany has a very forward-thinking policy. And a lot of it is that their traditional electricity cost is already very high. So we're seeing this, if you will, perfect storm coming together. The cost of fossil fuels are going up. Florida does have the solar resource, has a large population base, and we're there. So I think this, the floodgates will open up.
Tony Abbott, talk to me a little bit about policy. Governor Charlie Crist, as we mentioned, approved legislation back in 2008 encouraging solar energy development in Florida. That's cooled off in 2009, but today Florida among the only states nationwide lacking a viable renewable energy policy. What kind of legislative support do you think needs to be in place to encourage solar development?
Well, we do have sales tax benefits for buying the capital and things such as that, but we don't really have very aggressive metering laws that would provide solar incentives to, say, an individual homeowner who wanted to put panels on their house. All they could get reimbursed for would be the avoided cost in this case, which is essentially just the fuel cost. So there's no way to pay for the capital over the long term in terms of subsidies. So it takes a long time. So helping individual owners would be helpful in distributing this. But further than that, mandating a certain suite of energy coming from renewable sources is something that over half the states in the United States have already done, and saying, well, it doesn't have to be solar. It can be any of a number. But that would be sort of the type of push. This is essentially what they did in Germany. They gave a deep subsidy to production of distributed and industrial solar power facilities. And at the end of that, over about a 10-year period, it was in place. And now the cost in terms of subsidies are gone. And some would argue maybe even more rapidly than the ongoing subsidies for fossil fuels have continued. So those types of incentives, just things that could allow the industry to get a start, to get a foothold, to be able to compete against an industry that's already deeply subsidized, would help a lot.
And I want to throw to Jim Fenton and Buck Martinez, you know, do you think that this is something on the radar of Governor Scott, something that could potentially be tackled by the legislature in this session? You know, we've seen a lot of surprises from Governor Scott. Could this be a pleasant one for the solar industry? What do you think, James Fenton?
Well, if Florida is serious about jobs, I think doing something in solar energy is the best jobs bill out there. And if they've got something better, get that done.
But have you heard anything? Is this conversation going on?
Well, I think there's lots of talk. We need to see some action.
Tony Abbott, you're shaking your head.
I have no idea. I haven't heard much about this at all.
And Buck Martinez, what do you hear?
Well, I think there's two things. One is, I agree with Jim. I think if there's serious discussion about getting this economy moving and creating jobs, I think this would be a leading industry that could be serviced by Florida. Two is, if we're serious about diversifying the fuel mix in the state of Florida and creating additional energy security, I think this would be a huge opportunity also. We at FPL do not think the German model is the right model.
Why not?
Because it was extremely expensive. I think it was done strictly for economic development. I don't think it was done for energy policy, and it wasn't done for, you know, doing the right things by the energy model. And by that I mean, we got to be careful. It's got to be a fiscally conservative policy. It's got to be fiscally prudent for our customers. Today, our customers basically have some of the lowest rates in the nation. What we don't want to do is create a policy that basically gives a quick win to economic development and then is shut down because it's not sustainable, which is what's happening in all the European markets.
What do you think? Is FPL going to be in Tallahassee this session trying to push for anything to give solar an advantage?
Well, I think it's got to be, you know, it's got to be a consortium. You know, FPL is very supportive of renewable energy policy. FPL is more than willing and capable to implement a number of solar projects. But I think it's got to be the industry that pushes it. I mean, you've got major suppliers, you've got other major solar developers, and you've got major consortiums that are very interested in making this happen. So I think it's got to be a combination of all the key players to bring together, you know, kind of a job model, economic development for that the governor can see and basically get his hands around.
Well, we've been talking with Buck Martinez, solar energy expert at Florida Power and Light, Tony Abbott, director of environmental sciences at Stetson University, and James Fenton, director of the Florida Solar Energy Center at the University of Central Florida. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us for the conversation.
Thank you.
A pleasure.
Thank you.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida in terms of solar energy continues online at the Florida Talks blog. You can visit WMFE.org/intersection to find out more. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Do you think solar is the way of the future? Let us know on the WMFE Facebook or Twitter pages. Send email to intersection@WMFE.org. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Amy Green is assistant producer. I'm Mark Simpson, and thanks for listening.